Yeah, let's go with that. That's the way it will always be. Fame comes in many forms. Whoa, we can't. What, are you fucking crazy? Double standard, baby. Back in my 20s, I won a threesome with two NFL cheerleaders. I'm sorry, there, Libby. Let's go.
Let's go, indeed.
Okay.
One of us.
Yeah.
One of us.
I just accept it. I'm not outraged.
One of us can't get enough Ray. That's all I'm saying.
Too much Ray is never enough.
I'm set.
Welcome back to Life of Tiberius. Mm-hmm. I saw, by the way, episode for 30s. People who are playing along at home, 37. I went to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's new film, this week with Chrissy.
Cool.
Loved it.
Right.
Absolutely loved it. And I've been a lot of people I know didn't love it. And I think they just didn't get it. I mean, I'm gonna lay this down as gently as I can. If you didn't love it, you're an idiot. Because it was awesome. Sorry. I mean, I know
that
sounds harsh, but
gentle. Okay.
Yeah, right. It's as gentle as I possibly could. And I'm including like people like James Caffin in there. He goes, didn't like you know, I'm sorry, James. Yeah. Like, you know, I love you like a brother, but you're an idiot if you don't love it. And I'll tell you why I think maybe I love it more than some people is because it's a love story about two men who have each other's back, who've worked together for years, been through ups and downs, trials and tribulations. One of them.
Right.
Is a prancy, emotional actor who's like the star,
right?
Famous, popular, all the ladies want him,
right?
But really, he's a bit of he plays a hard man on the TV show. He plays a cowboy, plays a hard cowboy hero. hard. but
right.
Hold on.
But. I'm just hard. But I take your point, sir. I'm hard. I'm so hard.
He plays the hard character, but the other one, his stuntman, best friend, driver, slave boy.
Right.
Is the real cowboy.
Oh.
Quiet, taciturn, laconic, just gets shit done, doesn't ask for anything, doesn't complain, doesn't whine, just puts a smile on his face and gets shit done, whether that's beating up Bruce Lee or other things, which I can't say because there'd be spoilers for the film, but... he's just the man. He's a real cowboy. Right. Like, you know, just smiles in the face of danger, gets shit done. And I thought, well, that's us. Now, I'm not sure which of us is which, but somewhere in there, it's a story of two men who love each other in a purely heterosexual fashion. That's the one way that it differs from us. But I loved it. And there's a gorgeous woman in the mix that neither of them are interested in because
it's... They got each other.
They got each other and a dog. And one of us has a dog, so I'm not... It's man love with a dog.
Right. Hmm. It's a movie about us, basically.
It's not sexy. I think it's great.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, I didn't think you'd seen it yet, but glad you liked it.
I don't need to now.
I'm here for you, buddy.
I bet you.
Will you just stop talking over the soundboard? It's really annoying when you talk over the soundboard.
Sorry.
Well, here we are, Ray, in the final stretch.
Yes.
Of a man called Tiberius. You know, the way we're going, by episode 40, spoiler, he will be dead.
Right.
And replaced by a younger model of crazy.
well,
Now, 40 episodes isn't long for us. Like, Augustus took 100.
Right.
Julius Caesar took 60-odd. Alexander took 60-odd. But we have to remember that we covered a lot of Tiberius's life before we got to the Tiberius show. We covered a lot, decades of his life in the Augustus show. So, you know, we don't want people to think we're shortchanging them here.
No.
Let me tell you, by the end of the next three episodes, you'll wish we had shortchanged you, because the next three episodes are just 3 hours of just bad
wheels,
shit.
Wheels coming off. Yeah.
Wheels, yeah. Oh, wheels coming off like this podcast when you said snakes on a motherfucking plane. Episode 16. And the wheels just came off from there on. 400 episodes later.
We haven't seen them since.
We haven't figured out how to...
Anyway.
In our last episode, which we recorded nearly 2 months ago, by the way, before your various vacations.
Right. That was me. Mea culpa.
Thibaut finally found out that Sejanus had, A, betrayed him. It's sort of a pick your own ending. So either A, Sejanus had betrayed him, or B, he needed to blame somebody for all the shit that he was doing, and said, sorry, Seji, my old friend, you know, Sejanus.
Right.
You're my new fall guy. Depending, and I'll be interested to get your take and everyone else's take after these next few episodes. See what you think after this all plays out, whether or not Sejanus was going off on himself and doing all of this stuff, and Tiberius didn't know about it, or he was going off and doing it and Tiberius did know about it and approved or looked the other way, signed off, or Sejanus was just following Tiberius's orders.
Right.
But anyway, we killed off. Sejanus was humiliated publicly and executed. His family, his children were executed. His wife committed suicide, I think. And then early in 32, Tiberius left his island sex dungeon and crossed over to the mainland.
Yeah, he did.
But he couldn't bring himself to visit Rome when he got there, Ray. He got as close as the banks of the Tiber, but that was it. Why do you think he wouldn't go to Rome?
Well, whatever's going on in his head, I mean, out of everything that he's seen in his life, and now he finds out because of Epicatus' letter that his son may have been killed. I mean, what is there that's good in Rome for him? I can think of all of the bad things. I can think of plenty of bad things, but what's been something where he's smiled when he was in Rome that hasn't been ruined since that moment? I mean, I think between his responsibilities, all the experiences, and the fucking people of Rome. Have you met any Romans? The worst. I just think he is tired of it all. Just joking, of course. Just tired of it all. And I just don't think he... No! He doesn't want to go back because he doesn't have to. He's the man that's in charge, and he makes that executive decision. I think it's just a buildup of everything that's happened, and he just doesn't want to face it. What's your take?
Ah.
Whoa, we can't. What, are you fucking crazy?
Well, I'll tell you what Tacitus's take was, he said it was because he was ashamed of all of the dark and dirty shit that he'd gotten into over the years. Tacitus writes, in shame at the vices and profligacies into which he had plunged so unrestrainedly, that in the fashion of Cameron Ray in Vegas, he debauched the children of free-born citizens. It was not merely beauty and a handsome person, which he felt as an incentive to his lust, but the modesty of childhood in some and noble ancestry in others. Hitherto unknown terms were then for the first time invented. Now, derived from the abominations of the place and the endless phrases of sensuality. Ray, I wanted to ask you, what do you think some of these hitherto unknown terms were that were invented?
Oh, God. So according to what you just read about Tacitus, so sometimes someone could be young and that turned them on. Sometimes someone could be a noble birth and that turned them on. So terms that would have been invented. Please, God, tell me you have some of those. Geriatric sex, nobility intercourse, one-armed fucking. No, I don't know. Do you have a list of some of these words or terms that were invented?
Unfortunately, no. I just wanted to see what you would come up with on the spot. What was that? Geriatric fucker? No, what was it?
Geriatrically, I don't know. I just
mobility. What?
Yeah. Immobility sex, where the person can't get away because they don't have any legs.
Immobility.
I guess. I don't know. I'm just winging it, like he did.
Walking stick dildo. I don't know. Anyway, let's continue. Yes. Tacitus says slaves too were set over the work of seeking out and procuring, with rewards for the willing and threats to the reluctant. And if there was resistance from a relative or a parent, they used violence and force and actually indulged their own passions as if dealing with captives.
Oh, my God.
So according to Tacitus, it wasn't like everyone in the sex dungeon was there willingly.
Right.
It's not like a happy Willy Wonka land of fucking.
Right.
It's people
sex.
Were...
Yeah.
Slaves would go out and basically kidnap children.
Right.
And adults. And drag them back to the sex dungeon to be forced into doing dirty, heinous shit with some old man covered in boils. Here's how Suetonius... Mm-hmm. describes Thibaut's sex life. And now, and I just want to point out both, as I've said many times, but just to remind people, Tacitus and Suetonius are writing about 70 years later, give or take.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
About the same amount of time has passed when they're writing as has passed today from, say, the end of World War II.
Okay. Right.
So it's not, they're not writing 300 years later or 500 years later. They're writing within a generation or two. And, Suetonius, we know that his Lives of the Caesars is a little bit sort of dodgy
mm-hmm.
In terms of historical accuracy. He's writing as sort of morality takes on good characters versus weak characters. Is like a guide to what you who you should emulate and who you should avoid emulating. Tacitus, though, different. Tacitus is a senior civil administrator under sort of the Trajan empire rule, and he's fairly serious. I think. We'll see. I've got some examples over these couple of episodes of stuff that, where he can't be taken completely seriously. But, I think all in all, he tries to do a good job. I've read out bits and pieces of Tacitus over the years we've been doing the show where he says, listen, I can't say this for sure happened because the sources sound a little bit dodgy to me. But anyway, this is what the sources say. That sounds like a guy who's trying to do a relatively good job for somebody writing at the end of the first century CE in trying to account for real history. But anyway, here's what Suetonius says. On retiring to Capri, he devised a pleasance for his secret orgies, teams of wantons of both sexes, selected as experts in deviant intercourse and dubbed analysts, copulated before him in triple unions to excite his flagging passions.
So he's just giving in to his base desire because he can?
Triple unions reminds me of...
I want a threesome with two NFL cheerleaders. I'm hard. I'm so hard. I'm so hot and bothered right now.
I'm thinking... you know, I'm thinking you and Tibbo, give you 20 years and some more money.
And an island. Yeah.
Yeah, and an island. Well, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's island's probably going up for sale soon.
Yeah.
We could pick that up. I mean, I think he pretty much built this. I think his island is Capri. It is the sex dungeons.
Oh, my God, that's right. Jeez.
But anyway, continue with Sir Tony's before you get too excited there. Its bedrooms were furnished with the most salacious paintings and sculptures, as well as with an erotic library in case a performer should need an illustration of what was required. I'm wondering what kind of sexual activity needs a pictorial guide and you can't just explain it to somebody in...
I put my hand where? Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
The fist goes how deep? Really? I'm going to need to...
I don't know. I'm going to need
to see that.
Where's the diagram again? I'm lost.
Yeah. How do you get it up there? Really? It can take that? Now, I've seen Goatsy. Now, I'm sure Goatsy could take it.
Okay. But not everybody can be...
Yeah. Not Goatsy everyone can material. Be Goatsy.
Goatsy level. Yeah.
Goatsy
level. Instead of a gutsy move, that's a goatsy move. Yeah,
that's a gutsy goatsy move. Like, that's the goal. We all aim for goatsy.
Right.
But that takes years of dedication. That's, you know, I watched this video the other day of Shaolin monk. Did you know that in at the Shaolin temple, there are still 400 monks,
right?
100 of whom are dedicated to the study of Kung Fu as well as Buddhism. And to become a grand master, you have to study for 15 years, both Kung Fu and Buddhism, and then you have to pass extremely hard exams in order to graduate. And I watched this video, BBC thing, of this one guy who was trying to pass the exams, and in the style of Kung Fu he was doing was called, I think, the monkey stick, a bit like monkey magic for those of you who grew up in Australia or the Commonwealth countries in the 80s, you know what I'm talking about. And one of the things that this guy had to do in his exam is he's twirling his monkey staff. You know what a monkey staff looks like, right? Basically a staff, right? It's like 6 feet long. He's twirling it, flipping it, blah, blah, blah. He has to run up, jam one end of it in the ground, run up the stick. The stick's vertical. He has to run up the stick, have 2 feet on the stick simultaneously, let go of the stick with his hands for a second or two.
Right.
So he can, you know, throw a few punches. Then get down off the stick before it falls and grab it again before it hits the ground and get back into the kata.
You've
seen that?
I saw that. And he was trying it over and over and over.
Yeah.
And he couldn't quite get it. Oh, that was amazing. Because then his leader or mentor or whatever says something about you're not clear or calm or pure inside, and that's what's stopping me. I'm like, no, I think it's gravity, but hey, what the fuck do I know? I'm not a Shaolin monk, so keep trying, keep practicing. I don't know. But it was intense. It was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you are, what I'm telling you, Neo, is when you're ready, you won't need guns. Ooh. You won't need gravity.
Right. Transcend.
Crazy, right? Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, how'd I get to that? In Capri's woods and groves, he arranged a number of nooks of venery where boys and girls got up as pans and nymphs solicited outside bowers and grottos. People openly called this the old goat's garden, punning on the island's name.
Wow.
Venery being sexual indulgence, and I don't know what Capri has to do with old goat. I should have looked that up. The etymology of the name Capri is unclear. It might be traced back to the ancient Greeks. Kapros means wild boar, the first recorded colonists to populate the island, but it could also derive from Latin caprae, goats. Fossils of wild boars. I guess there's probably wild goats on the island. They called it Goat Island, Capri. There you go. Did not know that.
Precursor to Love Island. I get that.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm still still going. He acquired a reputation for still grosser depravities that one can hardly bear to tell or be told, let alone believe. Now, I hope you're sitting down, and I hope your pants are all the way up when I read this, because mostly. yeah, this is some heinous shit. For example, mm-hmm. Here we go. I'm just going to push through all this. Right. He trained little boys, whom he termed tiddlers, to crawl between his thighs when he went swimming and tease him with their licks and nibbles. And it gets worse. And unweaned babies he would put to his organ as though to the breast.
Right.
Being by both nature and age rather fond of this form of satisfaction.
And I think that's it. I think that's the end of the show. I think we're all good. We need to...
I'm hard.
No, the exact opposite. I think we need some herbal tea.
Get the fuck out of my face.
Some meditation. My God.
Amen.
Yeah. Wow. I can't even believe Suetonius wrote those words down in 100 CE, man.
That's pretty ballsy. Even for a historian. Yeah.
Even for Rome. Maybe. Well, yeah. He does say one can hardly bear to tell or be told, let alone believe. So, I mean, even for Rome, and we've talked about the use of children in Augustus's dinner parties and that kind of stuff. But even in Rome in 100, 120, whenever Suetonius is writing this, he's like, you know, this is, you think you've heard some bad shit in Rome? This goes to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Awkward. I just wanted to. I just find this interesting. So Augustus was the master of his world. And when you have that kind of unlimited power, I think your true character, your true personality, or at least aspects of it, come to the fore. And so he did, which we acknowledged, you know, he had a lot of affairs. He, whether it was the daughters of senators or prominent people or whatever, but he seemed to get around a lot and have a lot of sex. I'm sure as he got older, less of it was consensual, but I think it was pretty much just, I'm an old guy, I can do what I want, and I want your daughter because she's young and I can make it worth your while. That I can wrap my head around. The things that we assume or that we think Tiberius is up to, I guess because he's old, he's lonely, he's got, you know, just decades of work behind him and he's miserable. And because he's older, maybe he needs little different things to get it up. You know, I semi get that too, but to go to that level of depravity, was it there all the time and he just couldn't act on it? One, because Augustus was alive, and two, he had to run the state. Or as maybe as he gets older, he just doesn't care anymore. But I find it interesting when someone like this has the ability to do whatever they want, no one can stop them, and then to find out what they do. I just think that Tibo was messed up from day one. He just now can give it free rein, and so he does. And if you're like, if you're 13 and you're willing, I'll do it. If you're 68 and you're willing, I'll do it. But to go around and capture people, to kidnap people, to force people, to scare people, threaten, bribe, whatever. I mean, this is just, I guess, as sick as it gets. And I guess that's really the guy who's running Rome. It's just been hidden for quite some time.
You know, when you first start looking at porn, for me, when I was 12, 13, and looking at Playboys.
Right.
Just a picture of a naked woman.
I was excited.
That was enough.
Woo!
Yeah, by the time you get to our age, you need some, it's boring. You need some, edgy shit to excite, to titillate. Needs to get darker and darker as you go, or crazier. You know, I've seen the stuff that you watch. Like, it's involved barn animals and bats and people dressed up as vampires. It's right. bizarre. So I guess it's the same thing. I think Timbo started off fairly normal, and it just got right. boring after a while. Which, he had to yeah. take it to new levels. He wanted to, like Alexander the Great, wanted to see how far he could possibly go.
Alexander was going west. Timbo's going up someone's ass. It's very different.
He's not just going up someone's ass. He's getting other people.
Yes.
To go up right. someone's ass,
and he's watching.
While that person is going up someone's right. ass, and that layered. Person
yeah.
is going up an animal oh. who's going up. You know, he's taking it's human centipede level stuff.
Oh my god! Mm.
By the way, Suetonius finishes this section yes. with left a painting of Parasius's depicting Atalanta pleasuring Meleager with her lips. On condition that if the theme displeased him, he was to have a million sesterces instead. He chose to keep the painting and actually hung it in his bedroom. Atalanta is a character from Greek mythology. She's the virgin huntress. She was the lover of Meleager, one of the Argonauts. So there was a painting of her giving him a blowjob, and he said, no, I'll keep it. Now, Suetonius writes about he was putting babies to suck on his cock, right. he then says, oh, wait, that's not everything. He's got a painting of a woman giving a guy a blowjob, and I was like, really? Like, it's sort of...
That's like climactic.
That sounds... Yeah, I'd hang that in my bedroom. Like, yeah.
Call it art.
You really... Yeah, I think you should have started with the blowjob painting right. and built up to
big finish.
Baby blowjobs.
No pun intended. Right, right.
The story is also told, he says, that once at a sacrifice, attracted by the acolyte's beauty, he lost control of himself and, hardly waiting for the ceremony to end, rushed him off and debauched him and his brother, the flute player, too. And subsequently, when they complained of the assault, he had their legs broken.
Fuck. Because he could.
How grossly he was in the habit of abusing women, even of high birth, is very clearly shown by the death of a certain Malania. When she was brought to his bed and refused most vigorously to submit to his lust, he turned her over to the informers, and even when she was on trial, she did not cease to call out and ask her... Oh, sorry. When she was on trial, he did not cease to call out and ask her whether she was sorry. So that finally she left the court and went home, where she stabbed herself, openly upbraiding the ugly old man for his obscenity.
Is that the scene that's covered in I, Claudius, when she admits... I wonder if that's the same one where she admits to her husband and to their having a dinner party. He says all the things that Tiberius did to her, and then she kills herself right in front of everybody. That scene has just always stuck with me.
Maybe
it was inspired from that. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen that. Sounds good.
Yeah.
We need to remake I, Claudius, though, I keep saying. Yes, it's too boring.
We do. Jazz it up.
So anyway, getting back to the story, he didn't go to Rome. He went as far as the Tiber, then he turned around, he went back to Capri, returned to his sex dungeon. And meanwhile, back at the Senate, they are turning on each other like Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, but see, because this is the Senate, and because they're spineless, because it's been decades since they've actually been in charge, they just go through the motions like they always have, no matter what's going on. At the beginning of the year, they do their annual oath of loyalty to Tiberius. And like you were hinting at a second ago, not only is there fearful sucking up still going on, but because Sejanus is gone, because even before Sejanus, there's always rivalries in the Senate. There's always families going after each other. There's always someone who's trying to get back a deed done to them. So now that Sejanus, the biggest fear, is gone, they can get back to that. But first, the Senate has to go through some motions. So they condemn the memory of Livia Julia, the daughter of Tiberius' son Drusus, and they take Sejanus' wealth, which you have to imagine by this time is freaking enormous. And it was obviously confiscated when he was arrested. They take it from the treasury and they put it into the personal account of the princeps, which, if you think about it, is actually fair because most of Sejanus's money probably came from Tiberius. But the point is they kind of wrap these things up. And then this is when the senators are either trying to suck up even more individually to Tiberius or they're turning on each other and they want Tiberius's help.
Yeah, you said Livia Julia was the daughter of his son Drusus.
Oh, did I get the name wrong? Or the description wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, she was his daughter-in-law. She was married to his son Drusus. She was the daughter of his brother Drusus.
Drusus, the other too many and Drusus.
And married to his son Drusus.
And that's not complicated.
She had an affair with Sejanus, right, to bring down her husband, his son.
Thank you for clarifying that.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
So, yes. Now, remember last time, I think, well, you may not remember because it was months ago, but we talked about after the downfall of Sejanus, there was a suggestion that he should have a private guard of 20 senators around him whenever he came to Rome, which he is like, well, don't worry about it because I'm never coming back. So there, fuck all y'all. But anyway, he said, I don't like that idea because I don't trust senators. But then there was another suggestion by a guy called Junius Gallio. He suggested that the veterans of the Praetorian Guard should have reserved for them the first 14 rows at the theater. Thibaut was like, fucking what?
The Praetorian motherfucking guard. Are you shitting me? Have you not been paying attention to the news lately? Go check it out. See what happened.
He said, really, they're not theater buffs. They're soldiers. What? You're a senator. What? Why do you care about the Praetorians?
Good point.
The Praetorians are my responsibility, or maybe the Praetorian prefect's responsibility. What's it got to do with you? Why?
Yeah, why are you sucking
up? You trying to win favors for the Praetorian Guard?
That's all the sucking.
As you said, have you not been paying attention? I just killed the last guy who was the prefect of the Praetorians, and now you're trying to win favors for them. What are you up to there, Mr. Gallio?
That made Thibaut's spine tingle. Yeah.
So Gallio was exiled first from Rome, then from Italy, and then he went to the island of Lesbos. But then they said, you know what, Lesbos is too nice for this guy, so they brought him back to Rome. And kept him under house arrest.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because to remove him is not enough. We want him to physically suffer for coming up with such a stupid, poorly timed idea. So, yeah, the punishment of him was ordered or requested, I'm not sure, however you want to put that, by Tiberius into a letter. And the letter also wanted Sextius Pancononius to be dealt with. He's the one who had been pointed out as an agent to Sejanus, and he tried to help bring about the death of Gaius, you know, Caligula. So even though Sejanus is dead, there's still so many agents of his, because he's been around for years. This still has to be cleaned up, and now it's going to begin.
Well, Sexy P was also the Praetorian who personally killed Sejanus.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets arrested, sentenced to death, but given the option of prison if he turned informer, which he did. He named names. Now, I want to warn people, over the next few episodes, we're going to mention a lot of names of people that you don't know, you've never heard of. I went to a fair amount of trouble to try and figure out who they were. In some cases, we know a little bit about them. In most cases, we know nothing much about them. Tacitus mentions them all, and don't worry about trying to remember or follow who they are. The point is, over the next few episodes, that the wheels were falling off, and every man and his dog was getting accused and hauled up in front of courts and all this kind of stuff. So just go with it.
Yeah,
go with it. Don't try and follow the names and remember. Just the point here is that
take it.
Yeah, take it. Think of Goatsy. Just relax. The point here is that there was a general climate of fear and terror amongst the elite of Rome during these couple of years, because everyone was accusing everyone, and Tiberius was all over the place. He'd forgive some people and he'd execute others.
No consistency. And there was,
no rhyme or reason. Right. No one knew what was going on. And the general idea here is just to get the sense of how broken Rome was by this point.
Yeah.
So Sexy P gives up a guy called Lucanius Latiarus.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was the ringleader of the plot that had destroyed Titius Sabinus. We mentioned in an earlier episode, he was one of the friends and generals of Germanicus that Sejanus had executed.
Right.
So Sexy P gets hauled up. He goes, wait. I'll give up Latiarus. So Latiarus is condemned instead. Sexy P is kept in prison. Until 35, when he was strangled for writing some nasty poems about Tiberius.
Did he not learn? Just sit there in prison and be thankful that you're still alive, as opposed to, you know what, I'm bored. I think I'll write on the wall some insulting things about Tiberius. What's the worst that could possibly happen?
There once was a man called Tiberius whose sexual proclivities were quite serious. Little babies on his cock.
No. All around the clock.
Made him feel quite delirious. Thank you. That's on a coffee mug. We'll be on a coffee mug this week. I dare anyone to buy that and put that on their desk.
Oh, my God.
Then certain members of the Senate tried to take down Thibaut's old friend, Cotta Messalinus. Now, this is the same guy that once proposed a law that governors should be liable for crimes committed by their wives in the provinces. He was a former consul and proconsul of Asia. He was accused of making some jokes at the expense, both of Thibaut and Gaius, aka Caligula. Now, remember also, it was Cotta who wanted to immediately bring the maximum punishment against Agrippina and Gaius after Livia had died and Sejanus was gunning for them, and Thibaut wrote a letter to the Senate going, not very happy with these two. Cotta said, let's kill them. Let's grab them and kill them. And the rest of the Senate went, let's just hold off on that for a second. But when accusations against him about him, you know, telling some jokes about Thibaut appeared before Thibaut, he dismissed them. Said, look, Cotter and I are old friends. He's been of much service to Rome. Yeah. Stories like these, table talk in Tacitus's words, he referred to them as, let's not take it out of context. Let's not be completely crazy here. So he said, made some jokes about me. Jesus. So what? No big deal. I'm a big man. I can take it. Now,
but yeah.
Other people are going to be executed for similar crimes, and I think this is Tacitus's point.
Right.
You don't know what's going to fly. One day you'll get executed for doing something. The next day, somebody does the same thing, will get let off. Thibaut will just go shrug and go, "Wow, come on, it's fine. On. Don't worry about it."
Sticks so and stones.
So it's what's the word I'm looking for? It's, you said inconsistent, but it's random. It's random whether or not you're going to end up dead or just you know, a smile and a wink and a nod and it's all fine.
Right. If I could make a comparison to that, so and I do mean this sincerely. You know, I get up in the morning and I turn on the news and I'm, you know, is there a gun shooting? Is there a mass shooting? Is there not? Where is it at? How many died? And how far away is it from me? That sounds pretty damn cynical, I know, but that's what my mornings have become. But imagine being a Roman senator where you show up to the Senate every day, no matter what you've done or haven't done or said or haven't said, you just know that there's a slight chance that your name could be called out. You could be dragged in front of everybody, accused of something completely innocent and murdered right then and there, or you can be exiled. But the point is, literally every day, everybody's life's on the line because it doesn't make sense anymore. It's not rule of law. It's whatever Thibault says, and he's this old crotchety man who's probably losing the ability to think straight a little bit more each day, and it's all up to him. You have no idea what's going to happen, who's going to die, and what you're going to be charged of. That's the reality that they now live in. And these guys, even though they're the one percenters, they are freaking out every morning they wake up.
It comes down to when he reads the letter that's accusing you of something, does he have a baby sucking his cock? If he does,
you're golden.
You're golden.
Yeah.
Fine. If he's run out of babies to suck on his knob, then, you know, you can find yourself throwing down the Gammonian stairs by lunch. Tacitus says that Thibault's opening words in his letter to the Senate on this occasion sounded like the words of a man whose actions had finally caught up with him. He wrote, "May all the gods and goddesses destroy me more miserably than I feel myself to be daily perishing. If I know at this moment what to write to you, senators, how to write it, or what, in short, not to write." Tacitus follows up with this. I love this bit of Tacitus. "So completely had his crimes and infamies recoiled as a penalty on himself. With profound meaning was it often affirmed by the greatest teacher of philosophy that, could the minds of tyrants be laid bare, there would be seen gashes and wounds. For as the body is lacerated by scourging, so is the spirit by brutality, by lust, and by evil thoughts. Assuredly, Tiberius was not saved by his elevation or his solitude from having to confess the anguish of his heart and his self-inflicted punishment."
Jeez. So he's pouring his soul out in a letter to the Senate.
In a manner.
It's going to get worse, but still. Yeah.
"I'm so miserable. I'm so unhappy. Somebody send me a baby." Jesus. Cheer me up.
So the fallout of Sienus's death is far from over. Germanicus's friend, Quintus Servius, and an equus, Minucius Thermus, who had both, like many people over the years, had befriended Sejanus. But for whatever reason, probably the quality of their character, they were not known to have become haughty because of this. And now they face charges in front of the Senate. But the Senate can't really get worked up about these two because even though they were friends with Sejanus, they're seen as decent human beings. They're honorable. And so the Senate's like, I just don't see throwing these guys off the rock. It just doesn't work. It doesn't feel right because we know these guys. Doesn't matter. Thibault writes to the Senate and he denounces them. He wants, he orders Cestius Gallus to repeat the charge that he had written to Tiberius about and sent it to Capri. So he's like, tell them what you told me. Let's get rid of these guys. They're clearly an enemy of the state. So it doesn't matter that the Senate wants to hold back and be moderate. Tiberius is worked up, and when he wants something, he writes it in a letter and he says, do this now.
Do you remember who this Cestius is, Gaius Cestius?
No, tell me.
We've talked about him before.
Mm-hmm.
He's the same guy Suetonius called a lecherous old spendthrift. Augustus expelled him from the Senate for his shameful behavior. Jeez. Tiberius once reprimanded him for his debauched ways, but then a few days later, the guy invited Tiberius to one of his banquets and he said, "I'll come on one condition. You follow your usual routine and all the serving girls are naked."
God.
Now he's the chief prosecutor and he goes on to be consul in 35. So
he's doing okay.
Anything goes That's in right. Rome at this stage. Anyway, Thibault wanted Servius and Thermus to be dealt with harshly, but they turned informer as well. They gave up two other guys called Julius Africanus and Caius Quadratus. Tacitus says Africanus was a Gaul and he couldn't even find out who Quadratus was. The point is that it was a shitstorm of people informing on other people. And Tacitus writes that this whole deal of turning over your colleagues was the worst part of this the last years of Tiberius's reign. Tacitus writes, "And this was the most dreadful feature of the age, that leading members of the Senate, some openly, some secretly, employed themselves in the very lowest work of the informer. One could not distinguish between aliens and kinsfolk, between friends and strangers, or say what was quite recent or what half forgotten from lapse of time.
Jeez.
People were incriminated for some casual remark in the forum or at the dinner table. For everyone was impatient to be the first to mark his victim, some to screen themselves, most from being, as it were, infected with the contagion of the malady.
Oh, God.
Also, of course, if you were the first to accuse someone of a crime and they were found guilty and they were executed, you got some of their assets.
Yeah.
And you sort of prevented yourself from being accused, in theory, because you were seen as an accusor, not an accusee, and everyone was trying to be on the front foot. Everyone wants to be seen to be... charging other people with majestus or something like that, so you can't be accused of it yourself. Before we move on too far, I wanted to read something that, going back a bit, after Cotter got off the hook, the next person that the Senate turned on was the guy who accused Cotter.
Right.
This was a guy called Caecilianus. Now, I think this is the same guy Cassius Dio wrote about. But I don't know, it's hard. Like Suetonius says that Caecilianus was prosecuted and found guilty. But Cassius Dio writes about a guy by the same name. He says, and I think when he says he here, he's talking about Tiberius. It might have been a former incident. He said he overlooked the action of Caecilianus, who at the Floralia, I think we've talked about it before. It was a festival, ancient Rome, where they honoured the goddess Flora, the goddess of flowers, vegetation and fertility. At the Floralia, he had seen to it that all the merrymaking up to nightfall was done by bald-headed men in order to poke fun at the emperor, who was bald, and at night had furnished light to the people as they left the theatre by torches in the hands of 5,000 boys with shaven heads.
Oh, God.
You would have fit right in, Ray. Indeed, Tiberius was so far from becoming angry with him that he pretended not to have heard about it at all, though all bald-headed persons were thenceforth called Caesiani.
God.
So
if you make him laugh, if you make him smile, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah. 5,000 boys with shaved heads.
Jeez. A circus. It's become, Rome has become a circus.
Sounds a bit like Neverland, really, doesn't it?
Yes.
Michael Jackson and Jeffrey Epstein and Tiberius.
Yeah. Now
got an island together.
I know we're getting near the end of the time for this show, and I know you're desperately wanting to tell the story of Terentius, so if I could set it up for you. So
okay.
During this point of absolute chaos, fear, a climate of the unknown, comes this lone voice of reason. This person speaks the truth. This person nails everybody's soul to the board. The question is, does that go over well in Rome anymore these days? Because the equus Terentius was accused in his own turn of being a friend of Sejanus. That was his charge. But he's going to defend himself. He's not going to cower. He's not going to open up his veins. He's not going to starve himself to death. He's not going to go into exile. He's going to like, no. I'm going to defend myself, and I'm going to use something new, common sense. And balls.
Yeah. Now, Marcus Terentius, I don't know if he's related to guy we've talked about earlier, Marcus Terentius Varro, who was active during the Civil War, and he's the guy that developed the calendar, I think. The Julian calendar. He was the guy that developed that for Julius Caesar.
Nice.
I don't know if this guy's related, but probably in some way, directly or indirectly. I couldn't find out much more about this Marcus Terentius. Anyway, here's the story as Tacitus tells it. A Roman knight, Marcus Terentius, at the crisis when all others had hypocritically repudiated the friendship of Sejanus, dared, when impeached on that ground, to cling to it by the following avow to the Senate. In my position, it is perhaps less to my advantage to acknowledge than to deny the charge. Still, whatever is to be the issue of the matter, I shall admit that I was the friend of Cianus, that I anxiously sought to be such, and was delighted when I was successful. I had seen him, his father's colleague in the command of the Praetorian cohorts, and subsequently combining the duties of civil and military life. His kinsfolk and connections were loaded with honours. Intimacy with Cianus was in every case a powerful recommendation to the emperor's friendship. Those, on the contrary, whom he hated, had to struggle with danger and humiliation. I take no individual as an instance. All of us who had no part in his last design, I mean to defend at the peril of myself alone. It was really not Cianus of Vulcanae, it was a member of the Claudian and Julian houses in which he had taken a position by his marriage alliance. It was your son-in-law, Caesar, your partner in the consulship, the man who administered your political functions, whom we courted. It is not for us to criticise one whom you may raise above all others, or your motives for so doing. Heaven has entrusted you with the supreme decision of affairs, and for us is left the glory of obedience. And again, we see what takes place before our eyes. Who it is on whom you bestow riches and honours? Who are the most powerful to help or to injure? That Cianus was such, no one will deny. To explore the prince's secret thoughts or any of his hidden plans is a forbidden, a dangerous thing. Nor does it follow that one could reach them. Do not, senators, think only of Cianus's last day, but of his 16 years of power. We actually adored a Satrius and a Pomponius. To be known even to his freedmen and hall porters was thought something very grand. What then is my meaning? Is this apology meant to be offered for all without difference and discrimination? No. It is to be restricted within proper limits. Let plots against the state, murderous designs against the emperor, be punished. As for friendship and its obligations, the same principle must acquit both you, Caesar, and us.
And that goes back to the question you put at the very beginning of the show. Was Sejanus acting on his own, completely duping Tiberius, or was he Tiberius's agent, or was he just doing his own thing? And Tiberius is like, yeah, I don't really care because I'm doing my own thing. If we knew the answer to that, that would help so much. But this guy's got a very good point. Look, Caesar, as far as we know, he tricked you. He manipulated you. He tricked us too. If we're guilty, you're guilty. But in this current climate, it takes balls the size of Texas to say something like that in the Senate.
Yeah, or he just figured, look, I'm dead either way, man, so I might as well, I might as well have a shot here. Now, Tacitus finishes with the courage of this speech and the fact that there had been found a man to speak out what was in all people's thoughts had such an effect that the accusers of Terentius were sentenced to banishment or death, their previous offences being taken into account. Cassius Dio also notes that Tibo agreed that Terentius had made a good defense and should be let off.
Nice. See, that's the thing that you were talking about a minute ago. Tibo was like, yeah, no, that's good. Whereas if you tell it to him 48 hours from now, he might completely freak out and send a letter to the Senate. I want this person dead. I want their family dead. I want their dog dead. You just never know what you're going to get with this guy. But at this particular time, he's like, yeah, no, that sounds right. That sounds good. Bit of a cunt. Go ahead. Exactly.
You know what it is? It's a
double standard, baby.
Damn.
Oh, God.
As you do?
Yeah. So a bunch of people get executed for being friends of Cianus. This guy was a friend and gets off.
Yeah.
Just by going, fuck you, Caesar, you fucking hypocrite. Tibo's, yeah, okay. Yeah, good call. Good call.
Fair cop, yeah. But I don't know where you want to end this at, but again, this is... Huh?
There.
There? Okay. I'll edit that out.
Mm. Oh, well, you can put in your final comment if you want to get in the last word as usual.
No, I'm just looking for... How dare you, sir? No, I just wish this is one of those moments where you really want a TARDIS and you want to go back and you want to just know the absolute truth because it does change so much. I mean, Tiberius gets lost in the history books because he's in between Augustus and Caligula. I get that. But this is a moment where he sets a precedent and he changes the Roman Empire, which is going to change, obviously, most of the Western world. And you just really wish you knew the truth.
I'm impressed.
And
let me just say this real quick. I'm just you know, I well, and again.
All right, that's the show. We'll be back next week with more babies on penises and no. God, who knows what else.
Absolutely. Fame comes in many forms, my friends. Everybody's loved.
Hell, ah, damn.
Whoa, we can't. Whoa, are you fucking crazy?
I'm from Charleston, South Carolina.
I've learned to wipe myself.
I'm sorry, bear with me.
I'm back. No.
Ooh. Okay.
Aw. Never heard it before in my life.